Hi, my name's Tash and I'm still an alcoholic.
And my name's Caitlin and I'm still not an alcoholic, but this is still a podcast about alcoholism, mental health and addiction within the arts and all the things that make us question...
Why am I like this? Your fucking Christmas.
Oh, it was good. My parents were back, so were both of my brothers. One of them lives in Adelaide, the other one lives in Brisbane. And he came back and was like, Queensland. I'm like, yeah, narrow that down. So it was good. Family's back. I had 2 weeks where I had like, oh my God, free time. I wasn't
That's
at work.
That's nice.
I was insane. I was like, what do I do?
What did you do?
I have no idea. I saw my parents. I hosted a barbecue.
Oh, yeah. I came to that. That was fun.
Yeah. I had people in my house, which was really nice. And it was a thing of, like, giving back to the community I'd fostered over the years, which is really lovely because I've always, like, not had the space to be able to host events like that. And I always want to. And I finally had the space to do so.
You were a great host. It was very cute.
Thank you. Yeah, I went there to talk to no one. It was great.
Oh, there was a lot of, like, surprise guests that I didn't know were going to be there that were really made the day great for me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, though, I don't know if we talked about this, I noticed at your barbecue I brought 3 kombuchas with me.
Yes.
And I noticed that I smashed one after the other.
Like, yeah, we did talk about this. Yeah.
And I just I couldn't not. And I was conscious of it. And I was like, oh, there I go, going for another kombucha. Interesting.
Yeah.
And I guess what that shows me is that the social anxiety that drives me to go for another drink is obviously still there.
Yeah.
That those habits are still there. I'm just glad it wasn't alcohol because I just would have kept going. And it just shows me that I'm like, fuck, I'm still like this, you know? Yes. Like, it's so ingrained. It's such – habit isn't even the word. It's like it's compulsory.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I feel like I'm not – it's the point, isn't it? I'm not in control. That is the point. But, yeah, that's something I noticed. And I guess it's good to – keep an eye on those things.
Yeah.
Be self-aware.
Yes. Yeah, so did that. Oh, I saw the new Star Wars film.
Oh, God. Look, I'm not even going to go into this. Caitlin came to my partner's party and ended up having a very deep, long and passionate chat about the Star Wars film. I'm sorry that you're unhappy.
It sucked.
All right, bye.
It sucked so bad.
It makes me sad. Like, I lose life thinking about it.
Are you crying? It's like tearing up.
I am. I'm definitely crying.
It's like laugh crying at Ryan. And it's just really sad.
It was okay. But once you start to think about things, it's just a bit crap.
You shouldn't think about it. I won't go on about it. Like, I want to think about it, but I can't because it pains me so. But that's the update people want in my life, Tash. They want to know what I thought about the new
they
Star
do.
Wars
You're
film.
Right. It's true.
And I did that's not what they're like here for.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. How was your festive season? I'm just going to dry my eyes.
Well, I dislocated my jaw like
what?
2 days out from Christmas. Again, I'm a pretty big believer in like things happening for a reason and – Caitlin's making a face, but seriously, when I, like, for instance, when I broke my ankle, I truly believe that had I not broken my ankle and been bedbound, and I think that recovery, the beginning of recovery would have been so much harder for me, and I'm not sure that I would have been able to handle it the way that I did.
Mm.
I kind of feel the same way about this jaw incident. I feel like I had a catch up with my parents, and I was complaining about my jaw hurting a couple of days out from Christmas, and then the day after that, I was like, actually, I think I really need to go to a doctor. Went to a doctor and she said, okay, so your jaw is partially dislocated. And I sort of said, yeah, that's what it feels like.
So, yeah, that is
but like,
that
if,
fits.
You know, I thought I was being dramatic, but that is what it feels like.
Yeah.
Basically, it's like a subluxation. So at the beginning of the day, my jaw would be fine and my teeth would all be together. Throughout the day, through talking, eating, whatever, my jaw would just come away. The connective tissue would just stretch a little bit too far out. And then I couldn't. My teeth weren't aligning, so that meant I couldn't eat, I couldn't speak properly. I was taped up. My whole face was taped up. It looked like I had like a facelift, you know. I had to sleep with a mouth guard in and my head bandaged closed. Like I was on diazepam, these like extreme sort of pain mood suppressors, and that was really intense. And I guess there's positives and negatives. I'm kind of disappointed that that happened because I felt like I had really tried hard to mentally prepare for this Christmas and had put a lot of work into being quote unquote ready. And then this happened and I was so medicated, not by choice, that I felt like I didn't have the control over all the situations. And I felt like I handled them well because I was medicated, but I was frustrated because I wanted to prove that I could handle them well on my own.
Yeah.
So that was a thing, but in the same breath, you know, I do believe that things happen for a reason. And I think that maybe I wasn't ready to, maybe I wasn't quite ready. And maybe me not being able to speak over Christmas was a little bit of a blessing, you know?
Yeah, fair.
So that's really tough. And obviously medications like that are really tough. And, you know, my doctor's brilliant. She knows I'm an addict, so she's very wary about what she prescribes me. But unfortunately, I was just in a pain situation that could not be beat. Like there was nothing I could do that was taking away even a sliver of pain.
Yeah.
So that's hard, and it's hard because I have lots of leftover medication and I don't need it now, but I know I have it.
Yeah.
And so it's another one of those cases of like having alcohol in the house, you know, like I'm like, oh, well, it's there. Like maybe if I'm having a tough emotional day or I just kind of want to block out for a while, or I just need to, my brain's like, oh, you should just take a little diet. And I'm like, nope, you can't, like, that's for pain. That's for intense pain. You have to leave it.
Yeah.
The logical thing to do would be to give it to someone else.
Yeah.
Or to lock it up.
Yeah.
I guess there's that part of me that's like, no, I want to prove that I've got the willpower to have it and not use it. And I think, I do think that I'm in a good place to do that. I don't think that I'm in any danger of using it recreationally or irresponsibly. So I'm not worried. But yeah, it definitely complicated my festive season.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
Ryan, how was your festive season?
It was pretty normal. Like just, you know, sorry, not, I'm not saying no, that by comparison. Right. I've heard how that sounded in my head.
It's fine.
It was pretty normal. Just kind of family things. Yeah. Gifts with the fam.
Are your family big drinkers?
No, not really.
That's
like,
cool.
I wouldn't say they're big drinkers. Like, mum nowadays, now that we're kids and we're kind of grown up, like, she was never, like, it was always like soft drink only, even like, you know, into our 20s.
Yeah.
But I think now that we're all kind of getting on a little bit, she's like, oh, what do you guys want to drink? We've got beers, we've got wine, or we got like this or this. But it's always like only, you know, 6 beers to go around the whole family.
Amount.
Or like one bottle of each variant of wine or something like that.
That's so responsible.
And like, you know, by the time like we've eaten the 50 courses that she puts on, we're all like snoozy anyway. So it's like, and also, like, my parents live, like, way across town, so I'm usually driving and I've got to drive my brother back home most times and, you know, there's just no real room to get messy. And also, who wants to get messy with their parents?
Oh, God, it never ends well, at least not in my household.
Pretty normal.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I'm glad that we're all feeling rested, revived, ready for 2020.
Oh, gosh. it's February by the time this comes out.
Truly.
That's terrifying.
Did anyone make any resolutions?
I don't believe in resolutions.
No, neither.
I make intentions. I make intentions.
That's good.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay.
Can't say I came up with that. I stole it from someone.
That's fine.
So I think resolutions are shitty because you can, like, you try to hold yourself accountable for it, and if you don't do it, then you beat yourself up for it.
Yeah, totally.
Which is ridiculous, and life is hard already. Why would you need to do that?
Truly.
So my intentions for this year, look, a lot of them are work-related. and like achieving different things. Like I want to be published in a couple of things. I want this year to focus a bit more on writing and a bit more on podcasting, which I said the same last year. And I think podcasting definitely had its time and continues to have its time and got set off really well. Writing, not so much. That will change that.
Yeah.
After Fringe.
But you're so right in that intention is actually the core of so many things.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, you know, like even when people maybe talk to you in a way that you don't or that doesn't float very well with you, sometimes you go, oh, that kind of hurt my feeling.
Yeah.
But what was the intention? Because maybe the intention was good and maybe they were coming from a good place and maybe you're just like sensitive for other reasons or whatever. Yeah. But yeah, I think intent is a really interesting concept.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yes.
I didn't bother with any resolutions.
Yeah.
I was just like, don't die. That's it.
A good one.
Yeah.
yeah.
Do your best not to die and do your best to, I don't know, I guess like my intentions are always to be nice to people.
Yeah.
And I think the further along in my recovery I get, the more empathetic I am to others and other people's struggles. I feel like, I know we talked about it last season, seeing the wound in people.
Yes. And,
you know, where does that bad behavior come from? Where does that insulting thing come from? What wound or what struggle do they have that has almost forced them to behave like this?
Yeah.
So I think being considerate of that in others and taking things less personally.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. I think an intention for me on a more like interpersonal level is to be more honest and more vulnerable with people.
Yes. I actually, in our little Patreon episode with Jan, I challenged our Patreon episodes to spend one day saying exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
Just one day. And it's actually a lot harder than you think. And you realize if you try this challenge, and I urge all our listeners to do this, complete honesty, complete transparency and authenticity for one whole day. What it might show you is that you are hiding a lot of yourself to benefit others.
Yeah.
It might show you that you are not saying things that you believe in, that you are not standing up for what you believe in because you are concerned of how others might see you. And that's so sad. Like, we should all be living our honest, best, true lives, you know? But it can be really scary to do that if you don't feel safe or you don't feel heard or respected. Obviously, pick a day to do this when you'll be around people who will be receptive.
Yes.
But it's a wild time and, you know, somebody might hurt your feelings or say something a bit rude and just try saying, hey, that kind of hurts my feelings. And you don't have to blame them. You can say, oh, I think that reminds me of a time, blah, blah, blah.
Or
that upset me because do.
Yeah.
If you could blah, 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 this would be helpful. Those kinds of things. I think are important to practice
that.
And the more you practice it, the more it becomes everyday and natural.
Yeah.
And I think I spent a lot of this festive period actually talking to other people about the difficulties they're having in their relationships. And almost always my advice is just, oh, it kind of sounds like you guys just need to be honest. And like, I know that's so crazy, but I see these people and I'm like, why don't you just say so though? They go, he should know or they should know or this should happen. I'm like, nobody's a mind reader. Like, you have to be clear and concise about your expectations, what you want from someone and what you want from them. Like, we can't imagine that.
No.
Like, and I feel like Annie and I have gotten really good at communicating those things between us and even stopping ourselves. You know, maybe I'll be having a little tantrum and I'll go, I just feel like I could use a hand right now because I'm really overwhelmed with X, Y, Z. Could you do this little thing for me?
Yeah.
And then she understands that, oh, okay, I'm not firing off because she's done something wrong or it's about her. It's not about her. It's me. I'm run down. I'm tired. I'm reacting. And if I can clearly articulate that and my partner can understand that, then they can do a thing for me and then that gets better and it builds and builds and builds. And the more that you practice that, the more it becomes second nature and the more your communication and relationships with anyone are just so much more authentic.
Yeah.
And there's like those less, what do they think? And I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting.
Nice.
On the topic of relationships.
Yeah, dude, elephant in the room. You left us on a bit of a cliffhanger last season. Now we're like a telenovela.
Honestly.
Your parents.
Are the worst.
There was... Ooh, okay, straight into the deep end.
I just, like, they broke my heart.
Yeah.
So last season we discussed that I had not told my parents. My parents had not noticed that I wasn't drinking. It was huge. It was a huge barrier in my recovery.
Yeah.
And I don't think until I told them, I didn't realize how much weight it really had and how much I was carrying. Basically, I was forced into coming out to my parents about my drinking problems and my mental health issues, not in a way that I would have liked.
Yeah.
So I had a bit of a confrontation with my mum in the studio in my workspace, who was really peppering me with questions about Christmas and where I would be and what my contribution was going to be, blah, 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 blah. And I had to really calmly say, oh, I'm actually not attending this year's family Christmas. It's a really hard, I'm in a really difficult place right now. I feel that when I spend time with the family, we always bicker, things end badly. Like, I would just like to remove myself from it this year. It didn't go down well.
Yeah.
My mum burst into tears. She was very upset. Of course, I instantly felt guilt and grief and like I'd betrayed her. But I also felt so frustrated because I still wasn't being heard.
Yeah.
And she was just hearing what she thought I was saying. And what she thought I was saying was, I hate you. I never want to see you again. I can't spend time with you because you've ruined my life.
Mm.
One has to ask themselves, why is that her go-to? Why does she think that? Is it because she has deep down guilt and grief because she knows maybe some of the things that she did in the past weren't appropriate? Maybe it's more selfish than that. Maybe it's just purely she can't see anyone else and it does feel like a personal attack.
Yeah.
I can't claim to know or understand her. She certainly doesn't understand me. It all went really terribly. It got quite nasty on her end, and I just remained as calm and cool as possible. Tried not to cry was my end goal.
Yeah.
She left. It was all terrible. And I thought, right, this has to happen. It has to happen now. There's no way out of this anymore. I've sort of been backed into a corner. So I wrote my parents an email. I know that that seems impersonal, but unfortunately that's the way that my family has always communicated with me. You know, major news about people passing away has always been in email and things like that. And I don't think it's appropriate. I don't think it's kind or conducive to, you know, a supportive environment, but that's just the way that they do things. So I sent an email and I initially started by apologizing for upsetting my mum, acknowledging that her feelings had been hurt, and then reiterating that that was not my intention.
Yeah.
I then went on to say that I was writing this email under the advice of my psychologist and that actually I'm an alcoholic and I've been in recovery for, I think it was 16 months at that point.
Yeah.
And it was really difficult and it was really horrible. I said that I had been struggling with my mental health for many, many years and that it had become unbearable. And unfortunately this year I needed to take some personal time to not spend around a family who doesn't include me, ask about me. Like, my extended family don't make any effort with me at all. Mm. And I guess the idea that you should catch up with family just because they're family, that doesn't fly with me. Yeah. I don't accept that. I never have. It makes me uncomfortable. They're like strangers to me. They don't know anything about me and I don't know anything about them. Like, why should I have to sit in a room with them and be peppered with questions and interrogated and then ask about their lives? And I know it sounds bad, but I don't care. Like, you're no one to me. And
yeah,
I've just got such a distant relationship with my family. But the problem is that the family and extensive family, they want it to be a real family. They want to play pretend. They want to play happy families. And they're all trying so hard. And maybe, you know, maybe it is genuine and maybe it is just me that's not a part of that. That's a possibility too. I don't think that it's genuine and I don't want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
So I calmly explained that to my mum and I said, I would love to see my immediate family, you know, you and Dad, maybe another time. And I suggested some dates and I threw some ideas out there and I said, maybe I could do this, maybe I could do that. I really hope that you can understand and that we can go on from here. I think it was like the scariest thing I've ever done. It was the most raw thing they've probably ever heard from me. And I felt like I had finally done the thing.
Yes.
Said the thing.
Yeah.
And that was it. That was my last secret that I was holding on to, you know, like, yep, they know I like girls. Yep, they know that, like, I'm going to be pansexual and polyamorous. They know that's fine. This was my last little piece of me that I hadn't shared. They left me on red for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Which sucked.
I think before we go any further, and I know I've said this to you in person, but I'm going to reiterate it so you can listen back to it and say how proud I am of you for being able to do that, because just where you were 8 months ago, even considering that,
is, I couldn't have done it.
Massive growth and change.
Yeah, it's nice, and I definitely do recognize that, and I know that I couldn't have done it.
Yeah, good.
But then the reply, was so awful. She basically started with, like, to say I was upset was an understatement. You devastated me, and went straight into how hurtful my initial comments had been. And I was really taken aback that that was what was taken from my email, and that she still sort of wanted to fight about this other thing that had happened.
Yeah.
She said that while her and my father acknowledged that it is the way of today's people to cut out things that they deem to be unhelpful, her and my father grew up in a time where respect and family values meant more. So that was hurtful.
I'm sorry.
I know.
What?
I know. So that sucked. And then they asked me if I had considered the implications of my choices.
Oof.
That sucked too.
Yeah.
I don't. Yeah. And then they said, we're busy on those days, that I'd ask to catch up. So at no point in the email had they acknowledged what I'd said.
Yeah.
They didn't touch on my mental health, nor the huge achievement that is 16 months of sobriety.
Yeah.
That was not mentioned at all. I was just besides myself. I couldn't, like, I felt like a little girl. Like, it was that real regression, and I was just like, I cannot believe that as a fully grown woman who is finally having the balls to tell my truth, and I'm still not being heard. Like,
yeah.
I have tried to tell them before. I've had this conversation. It's almost every 7 years that I have it with my dad, because I haven't been comfortable to go to my mother and say this, because this is the reaction I was afraid of.
Yeah.
So I never felt comfortable to go to her, but I did go to my dad multiple times. And every time I sat there hysterical in front of him, wringing my hands, sobbing. And these are the only times he's seen me cry. And I just said, I'm struggling. Like, I have a drinking problem. I have this, you know, these are my issues. Help me. Like, and every single time my father sat across from me, stony faced with nothing to say.
Yeah.
And just let me cry and let me pour out my emotions with no response every time. It almost sounds like abuse. And it's like, it's difficult because I understand that my father especially grew up in, like, quite a strict, militant, you know, household, and his and my mother's upbringings were very different to mine. I can understand why they would have different views.
Yeah.
However, times change, people change. You have to grow and change with them.
Yeah.
We are not living in the 1920s. You cannot treat me like that.
Yeah.
I am a fully grown woman. I'm not a child. I am 27 years old.
You're 28.
Fucking hell. I was like, wait, didn't I have a birthday?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So I'm 28. Wild. You can't talk to me like that. And it took a couple of days for me to calm down. I was really quite hysterical, and I thought I regressed so much into, like, I felt like a teenager again, and I felt like I didn't want to see anyone. I just wanted to lock myself away and listen to, like, pop punk emo music and just be miserable. I just wanted to be miserable.
Yeah.
took me a couple of days, kind of like talked myself out of it, reminded myself that I am a strong, badass fucking bitch. And actually, I just feel sorry for them. Like, how sad to have the thing that they think they want is for me to come to them.
Mm.
How sad for me to finally do that and you still to push me away. You don't know what you want. Like, they don't know. I replied to them and I said, look, I am devastated that you couldn't acknowledge my achievements. I am so hurt that you can't see how difficult this has been for me. I would like you to consider the implications on my life if I had not stopped drinking. Forget about what fucking implication, like what are the implications they want me to think about? Like, your feelings might be hurt.
Yeah.
Because you have to take a long, hard look in the fucking mirror. Like, I don't know. That was all very traumatic and very upsetting. I really had hoped, so that was before Christmas, a couple of months ago, and I had really hoped that when we saw each other in person, they would acknowledge it. I'm not looking for congratulations. I'm not looking for a pat on the back. I'm just looking for someone to say, I'm so sorry we missed that.
Yeah.
Or how can we help support you?
Yeah. Like, I see this. I believe this.
What do you need from us to help this recovery process?
Yeah.
But nothing, like actually not a single thing. So I caught up with them, just me and them, for a Christmas lunch, just out somewhere. It was 2 hours. By the end of the 2 hours, I could feel my leg bouncing under the table, the anxiety. I was like, I've got to go. I've got to get out. Like, I can't do this. But it was perfectly pleasant.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it feels like a business meeting. Every time I spend time with my parents, it feels like I'm just at an office meeting.
Uh-huh.
We just talk about work. We talk about their work, their businesses, my work, my businesses. I've noticed that it's not embarrassing. It's kind of sad, but I've noticed I'm constantly looking for validation.
Okay.
And when I see them, the only thing I want to talk about is my successes.
Yeah.
And so I say, oh, I got this contract with this company and I did this fun job and I only want to talk about the things that I feel good about because I'm just looking for someone to say, well done.
Yeah.
Or we're so proud of you or that's so clever.
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry that we told you you'd never go anywhere with art. Like, you know.
Ooh.
And it is interesting because I noticed at that Christmas, I noticed a real change in my dad.
Yeah.
Which is something I never, ever thought would happen. But he, and it sounds like little things, but like he looked me in the eyes and nodded when I spoke. And I know that sounds so minor to most people, but for me, like that is all the acknowledgement that I needed. Like someone to actually be making eye contact with me and acknowledging that they can hear my voice. I've caught up with my parents twice since then.
Yeah.
Both times have been pretty horrible, just a lot of me speaking and then being silence and then me saying, okay, cool, guys, and honestly, still silence.
What?
Because they don't know how to speak to me.
Okay.
They can't give me a compliment. They can't acknowledge that I've done literally anything.
Like, yeah.
It's unbelievable. And so one of the recent catch-ups I was dreading because it's been my birthday, my mum's birthday, so I've got time now where I won't see them again for a little while. But
yeah.
I, rallied a couple of family friends into this dinner so that I didn't have to be there alone with them.
Yeah.
And this family friend knows all about my struggles and has been like a surrogate mother to me and has supported me so much. I'm endlessly, endlessly grateful, for her. And she started praising me and saying, oh, Natasha, I'm so proud of this and this is truly remarkable and this is just wonderful. And my dad was, nodding and smiling. And I was embarrassed at how happy that made me.
Yeah. Well,
and I was like, oh, my God, my dad is proud of me.
Yeah.
And I felt so stoked. And then to glance at my mother is just like the crushing blow of having her staring down at her plate and saying nothing.
Yeah.
Like, can't even smile and nod, like can't acknowledge at all that I have done anything.
Yeah.
Wild.
Yeah. I wonder how much unlearning they have to do with their own practices and their own behaviors.
And like, this is the fucking thing. And this is what is so difficult to me is that I'm an extremely empathetic person. I'm extremely aware of other people's feelings and reactions. So this whole time that this is happening, while there's a part of me that's hurt and sad, there's an even bigger part of me that feels so guilty, and I just want it to go away, and I want to make it easier for them, and I feel sorry for them, and I feel bad for them, and I'm like, maybe if they did this, this could make their life better. Maybe if they did that, like, and that's not my responsibility.
No, it's not
like,
on
I'm
you.
A child. Like, yeah. I'm their child. I shouldn't have to do the work for them.
Yes. Agreed.
But also, if I don't do it, who will? And will the problem ever get better? Is that my responsibility? Like, do you know what I mean? It gets so messy, and I don't know what the right thing is to do.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not in a position where I would be heard now, so there's no point. But I guess what I did notice from that whole experience is that I care a lot less.
Okay.
And, like, I didn't even cry this time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, whereas I don't think I could even talk about my parents without tearing up before. And now I've just sort of accepted it. And I'm like, I'm sad for you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sad for you that you – somebody said it to me. I wish I could think who now. It might have been my psych. But – feel sorry for your parents because they don't get to know you.
Yeah.
Like, they don't know me. They don't get to know. Like, they're missing out on me.
Yeah.
And I think I'm a pretty great person. I try really fucking hard to be a good person. It's not easy. Like, I have to make a conscious thought before I open my mouth. And we all should. We should all watch what we say. Like, there are those three posts that you should think before you say anything. Like, is it true?
Yeah.
Is it honest? And is it kind?
Yeah.
And if they don't pass any of that, then you don't say it.
Yeah.
Wait, I feel like two of those are the same. I feel like I messed that up. But
it depends how you feel about honest and true. Like, honesty and truth there.
Like, you get the gist, though. Like, you should have those gatekeepers that sort of, you know, treat others as you'd like to be treated, I guess. And that's huge for me. And I try so hard to treat everyone with the respect that I would like to be treated with. And now for my parents, I think I'm just going to start calling them out.
Yeah, okay.
You know, like I called my mum out. She was being a dick about how I wasn't doing birth week. And she's like, you know, what are you doing? Yeah. So she was like, oh, what are you doing? So classically, this is something I go into in my Patreon as well about birth week. But my mum always used to kind of bully me about it and be like, oh, like you think you're so amazing that you would have a birth week. It's like your own festival. Like, just get over yourself, you know.
Okay.
And I was always like, no, it's not about me. Like, it's about bringing all my friends together and having a good time. Like, I don't – yes, I'm wearing a crown and being dramatic, but, like, it's actually because I hate myself and I just need to project any energy so that I'll get attention. Like, you know, and these are things that I know about myself and that I can decode in the moment, but my mother will never understand. She's got so many things that she can't understand about herself. And that's sad. But yeah, so she made a point of like, oh, I'm not doing birth week. And I said, yeah, well, I'm not an alcoholic anymore. Nothing, just silence.
Yeah.
And so that's my plan from now on. I'm just going to like say it how it is.
Yeah.
Say the honest truth and like, I don't really care if it upsets them anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I am living my truth. Like, this is the truth. This is what happened. Like, I know what happened. I was there. Like, So that's that.
Yeah.
Done. So I feel kind of unburdened at least. Like, that's it didn't go the way I wanted and it was horrible when it happened, but it's over now and I never have to do it again.
Yes.
I never have to come out again. I never have to explain it again. They have the information. They can do with it what they will.
True.
Yep.
Yeah.
And great times.
Yeah. You're just like, yep, done.
Yeah, moving on.
Yeah, moving on. See, it's almost festival season and it stresses me out even thinking about it.
I haven't actually got that much on my plate yet.
Yet being the key phrasing in that. Yet. Yeah.
Have you overloaded your plate yet?
Maybe a little.
Yeah.
Sort of. Nah, I'll be fine.
That's what we all say.
Yeah. I think a part of my brain forgets that I work 4 days a week.
Yes. Yes.
Which I do work 4 days a week, but there are night times. I don't work during the night.
Oh my God. You should be resting during the night.
The worst.
I mean, who am I telling you? Like, I'm going to.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Yeah. So, like, no, it'll be okay. I think the latter part of the festival will be busier because that's when the other two festivals start happening.
Yeah. So I think we started this podcast around this time.
Yeah, we did. Oh, yeah. Or just after. It was Cab Festival.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So festival season is hectic, especially in Adelaide.
Oh,
we
yeah.
hold one of the world's biggest fringe festivals.
Biggest one in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, it's absolutely massive. Our entire city gets turned into a venue, basically.
Yeah.
Like every little alley, every pub, every florist is a fringe artist space. Yeah. There are artists teeming in the streets. There are activities happening everywhere.
Roads get closed down.
Yeah. It's vibrant. It's colourful. There's alcohohol everywhere. Everywhere.
Genuinely everywhere.
Yeah. It's insane.
Yeah.
I really struggled last year because I think, I don't even know if we touched on it, but last year I had was still recovering from my broken ankle and I'd fallen off the Lime scooter.
With the bruises. Remember the bruises. Yes.
Yeah. So I had this insane fall on an electric scooter that ended in, I'm not even exaggerating, a bruise from my knee to my ankle the entire way around my leg.
Crazy. I remember seeing it and being like, what is this? Go to the hospital.
Yeah. Well, and I went to the hospital.
Yeah.
And he was like, it's a bruise. And I was like, but surely this isn't normal. Like, and then obviously that's what led to my diagnosis of having Ehlers-Danlos syndrome.
Yeah.
So see what I'm saying? All things happen for a reason. Like, had I not had such insane, crazy bruising, they might not have realized that they'd secured my ankle the wrong way, you know?
Fair.
What a time.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be interesting and we'll like do a whole episode on this.
For
sure. Go into it now. Probably do a couple. It'll be interesting to see how both of us cope with the Fringe Festival season.
Yeah.
In terms of not even just alcohol, but like alcohol anxiety and workloads.
Yeah.
And looking at that. Maybe we should like actually properly keep track of that throughout.
That's a good idea.
Do little thingy things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm coming up to a year and a half sober.
Yes. I was going to ask, how many months has it been?
So when this episode comes out, it'll be 1 year, 6 months and like 3 days.
Oh, wow.
Which is crazy. Like the last 6 months have flown.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely flown.
Yeah.
I only came out publicly as an alcoholic 6 months ago. Because remember?
Really?
Yeah. This podcast came out on my 1 year anniversary. Yeah. And I did my little, like, Instagram video and I was like, what's up? I'm a fucking alcoholic.
Yeah. Well, because it's weird because, like, my context of our friendship is you've been sober throughout all of that.
Yes.
And we've been friends for longer than 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never known drunk Dash.
She's...
And I hope
really,
I never do.
I really want to have someone come on and chat about drunk Tash.
Yeah.
So that the audience can get a bit of an insight to what a fucking nightmare I was.
We shall.
And I think what they would say is that it was just my complete disregard of self.
Mm.
And that's always what it came down to is that I just didn't care about myself. So, you know, running from one place to another, I just wasn't conscious of like, oh, there's you might trip there. Like if I felt myself falling, I wouldn't really try and catch myself.
Yeah,
I would just
be
like, oh, well, maybe this will fuck my face up. Like not consciously, but I'm just going to let it happen. I was just subconsciously like, whatever fucking happens to me, happens to me.
Yeah.
And if I'm a gross mess, then I'm a gross mess. Like if I break my face, I break my face. Like, you know, when you're driving and you're like, you just want to be hit by a car so it'll all end. Like,
no.
Mm.
I also don't drive, but
sure. But like,
yeah,
you're on a bus and you're like, oh, hopefully this bus just goes off a cliff and it'll all just be over. Like,
no.
Okay.
Yeah.
See,
that's a thing.
That is a thing.
That's a thing.
Because
we've had this conversation. Yeah. That's a thing.
And this actually happened at the dinner I was talking about. I like,
yeah, okay.
Made a reference to, it's been a really tough time in Australia.
Yes.
Like climate anxiety is
high because our country is on fire.
The whole country.
Yep. And we're in a heat wave. We're in another heat wave. The bushfire is gone back up.
Yeah. I can't really talk about it. It's just too much right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that that's not something that I'm talking about or doing. I just don't think this is the platform for it.
Fair.
But that has severely contributed to my mental health as well. And I made a comment, you know, at family dinner and I said, well, you know, no wages on a dead planet, you know.
Mm.
And they kind of went, oh, yeah, well, you know. And then I said, I mean, it would just be easier, wouldn't it, if it all just kind of. And then everyone gave me a bit of a look and was this really concerned look. So I was like, oh, I don't realize how often, like, trigger warning, suicidal ideation is just a part of my daily life. And it's a big part of me and Annie's conversations,
to
be honest. Like, when we're at home, we're often like, wouldn't it be great if everything just blew up? Like, wouldn't a meteor shower just be so, I just need to wipe it all out. And like, and we're both talking so casually and neither of us are concerned for the other one because we both understand that, that is how we honestly feel that it would be better if everything was just done.
Whoa.
And I'm not saying that like, I want to go and physically hurt myself to make it, not today at least, but
yeah,
I'm not saying that, but it's, I think for a lot of Australians, we're in this well, a lot of people around the world, what's the point?
Okay.
Kind of feeling.
Yeah.
Everything is terrible and everything has terrible consequences, and it's hard to see, I guess, hope.
Mm.
And I guess myself personally, I feel like, okay, I'm sober, still fucking sad. Like, yeah. That's not fair. Like,
yeah.
I thought that was my issue.
Yeah.
You know? And it's not. Like, you got to go to the wound. What's the wound? The wound is that I hate myself. Like, that's what I've got to address.
Yeah.
I can't address it because I hate myself too much to begin to address it. Like, it's a vicious fucking circle. Like,
yeah.
Tough.
See, I'm a reckless optimist.
See, and I would say I think that I am as well, but I'm just not.
Yeah, no.
I'm actually not.
Nah.
I'm a fake optimist.
Yeah. I mean, like, I've probably got some tones of realism in there where I understand the gravity of situations. But, like, I've worked for NGOs. I fucking throw myself into Star Wars where the main messaging is that hope will lead us to the end of that.
Yeah.
And, like, I believe in the power of people and that we can make a change. People just need to be educated in order to do that. And we've just got to tear down some things in society to get there.
Yeah.
But there's that thing of I will continue to fight until we hit that end. And until that end happens, I will continue to make sure that we do not reach that end.
Yeah, that's really nice.
Yeah.
I think it's, like, I guess it's a really selfish, 'cause I don't think about others that way.
Oh, but it's also a self-indulgent thing. Like, I still want to be kicking about on a planet that's, like, thriving.
Yeah, sure. How do you feel about the controversial topic? How do you feel about people having kids?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I genuinely don't know, and it stresses me out so much because there's so many factors come into play. Mm. Like, if you're in this room, like, you can – I'm just –
Yeah.
Like, as someone who has endometriosis, and the more I hear about getting pregnant, the more I'm like, that sounds like it's going to be a huge time on my body. And, like, if I have someone who's, like they're born female, then they'll probably be granted this curse, but also I'll be bringing them into a world that is burning.
Yeah.
But I also don't want the world to burn, and we'll do stuff to try to help it. And it's just this endless cycle of I don't know.
I think it's difficult as well with the endometriosis community because there is such a – I know. There is such false information, the stigma that if you just get pregnant, the baby will take out all the endo and you'll just be fine. Or you might not.
Or a lie. Not
you,
true.
I mean, you also might not. But you should just try it.
Fake news.
And it's like, sorry, why am I – you shouldn't just try babies. Yes. Like, that's not something that you can just try once. Like, that's a lifelong commitment.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah, and there's so many other things that tie into that. And I think in the past you didn't have to think about the impact it would have on the environment. And now you have to think about that. And if you aren't, what are you doing?
Babies?
Like, oh, yeah.
I mean, of course there are ethical and sustainable ways to raise a child, but for the most part, if we're talking billions of people across the world, the waste that an infant produces is unbelievable. Like,
and then why would you give birth to a child when there's already a child out there who needs you?
What do you think about – okay, I'm not turning this into a conspiracy podcast.
Oh, gosh.
But what do you think about the theory that the coronavirus is just a population control?
No, Tash.
Why, though?
No.
I'm just floating the idea.
No. No. I'm going to shut that the right hell down.
Fair enough. That's a tangent I could go on for a long time.
Mm.
I just think I've been – no, this isn't about –
I was going to continue the coronavirus, though.
Oh, okay.
Am I the only one who thinks of beer?
Oh, yeah. No, that's – I've seen many a meme.
Okay, great.
Is that – that's not an Australian beer.
It's pretty popular in Australia. I'm 80% sure it's Mexican.
I think it's a Mexican beer.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Corona and their – do you know what? Their logo – not their logo, their slogan. Do you know what it is?
Oh, I've seen ads.
It is in my brain forever. So their slogan is from where you'd rather be.
Yes.
And that is a good one.
Beautiful marketing.
Yeah, like that's a good one.
Yeah.
Because every time I see it, I'm like, that – is where I'd rather be.
I want to be on a beach with a beer,
yes,
listening to my favorite musician do an acoustic set.
I don't even drink beer, but before I didn't even.
Yeah.
And I was like, that marketing works for me. And it was something that I would think about where I was like, I'd be having a shitty day at work and I'd be like, from where I'd rather be. I want to go to the beach. And I would think about, and I would trail into a little alcohol tangent.
Yes.
Interesting.
What was the other thing you were going to say before I talked about Corona?
Look, I was going to talk about the hashtag Free Britney movement, but I feel like we should just move on from conspiracy altogether.
Like, put a pin in that.
Oh my God, can we talk about how we got a shout out from one of my favorite podcasts?
Yeah.
Because that was really adorable.
Tell us about it, Tash.
Well, as you guys know, I have plugged the show many times before. I have really enjoyed the podcast A is for Alcoholic. There are tons of episodes. I refer to them as like my sober uncles, like these two dudes, like men, and they're like, you know, pretty manly men, and I don't really have a lot of those in my life.
Yeah, fair.
So I really like listening to podcasts from a diverse group of people that I wouldn't usually spend time with.
Yeah.
I think that's how you get different insights, you know? So that's pretty interesting, and we gave them a bit of a shout out, and they called me Tash, but I'm okay with that. Yeah, that's so fine. Yeah. you know, they mentioned us on their podcast, yeah. And that was really nice.
I think they accepted the title of being your sober uncles as they well.
Did.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, they did. Yeah. They said that, yeah, they're happy to be that, my sober uncles, and so I was stoked about that.
Cute.
I'd also like to give a bit of a shout out to one of our Patreons, our first ever Patreon, actually, the wonderful, beautiful Remy Gordon, who has just come out publicly about their own sobriety journey, which we could not be more proud of, we could not be more supportive of. If you want to share your journey with us, fucking journey, we're back on this bullshit.
journey.
If you want to share it with us, we love to hear about it. Not in person, though, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Like, you can shoot us an email, you know, Instagram, anything. That's so cool.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, when you see Caitlin, Ryan, myself about, we do like to talk about the podcast. It's totally cool to give us your feedback. That's so great. But please be conscious that we don't always have the time or the mental space to hear your full story.
Yes.
And be the support you need right then. It's not saying we don't want to hear it. It's just in person is usually not the best time.
Yeah.
But we do love, I know I personally love, I had a really cute moment actually.
Oh yeah.
Survival Day.
Cool.
So Nancy Bates, who's a fantastic Indigenous performer, got up and asked everybody to stand up and hold hands. And so holding hands with these strangers, whatever, we finished singing. Afterwards, the person on my left turns to me and goes, "Sorry, are you Tash?" And I'm like, "Oh, here we go."
Yes.
"I listen to your podcast. Like, it's really good. I really like this. I really like that."
Nice.
It was a really beautiful little moment. And that was a nice little little way for my day to end. And I thought, this is what I'm talking about. Community, holding hands, singing songs. Like,
Yeah. I'd like to formally apologize to anyone who's told me that they listen to the podcast, because every time I'm like, I don't know how to register this information. Thank you. And then we'll engage you in live feedback of what did you think? What did you like? What didn't you like?
Do you? I don't. Yes. Oh my God, no, I don't.
Well, because I want to know, because like that's my job as the producer.
Yeah, you want to know from the, whereas I just, the first thing I think of is, holy shit, they know all my flaws. They know all my bad shit, and they know they've got an opinion of me that they have a fully formed opinion of the person that they think I am.
Yeah.
I need to be that person, or I need to show them that I'm not the person that I think that they think I am.
Yeah, okay.
And it's all very in my head. And
I'm like, what information do you have that we can use to make this better?
Yeah, love it.
Yeah.
Very good.
So if you have any feedback,
love it. Hit me up.
Yeah.
Send it to Caitlin. I don't want to hear it. I think that I'd like to take a little moment to, say how proud I am of myself.
Yeah,
good. I feel like I'm pretty shocked at how far I feel like I've come in such a short time.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm well on my way to getting it together. Maybe I'm just feeling positive today. I've been having some rough times, but don't we all? But I'm feeling, optimistic about the alcohol issue in my life.
Yeah.
Everything else is, having some times, but I feel like I've got a pretty good handle on drinking.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to going to Melbourne this weekend with the Seabass band, with Ryan, and having some sober gigs in Melbourne. That'll be really fun.
Yeah. Nice.
What are you gonna do?
You too.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Cute. Nice. Is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like we've had a little chat for today. So welcome back. Welcome to season two.
Oh, what's your thing of
my fucking episode. Little quote.
Yeah, I remember how this works.
Yeah, here we go. So I think I'm going to take inspiration today from Amy from Confetti Rebels,
okay.
who's a fab little brand that I encourage all of you to look up. Got some really wonderful sparkly things and, of course, some great messaging teas. So Amy sent me one that arrived right in time for my birthday. It was absolutely perfect. And it just said, enough. And I honestly teared up at the idea that I could even possibly be enough.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a message that we should all remind ourselves of. You are who you are, and that is enough.
Yeah. Yeah. On a very similar version as something that I've been following for a while, Nathan Zedd, who's also known as the Third Pew on YouTube.
Cool.
Really similar shirts a couple of years ago saying good enough.
Cute.
And it's just this like constant thing of like, yeah, you are good enough, you're enough, and that's all you need to be.
Yeah. It's something that we forget so often.
Oh, yeah.
Always chasing the next thing. Yes. Always looking for...
How can I be this? How can I be that? Or it's like, how can I improve?
Like, you know, what you just said actually about the podcast is a perfect example. Like, somebody's giving you a compliment on something you've achieved and your first response is still to ask how you can make it better.
Yeah.
It's an exact, you know...
Called out.
But it's true. It just goes to show that we do it without thinking every day.
Yeah. Like,
So just take a little moment, even if it's just at the end of this podcast, just take like 5 minutes to just think about all the good you've done.
Yeah.
We are all good people.
Yeah.
Some have to dig a little harder than others. Do you want to know one of the worst things that I ever said to an ex?
Oh, my God, sure.
So she was a bitch and we were having this conversation and I said, the thing is, some people are really good people and some people have to try really hard.
Yeah.
And she was like, are you saying I'm not a good person? I said, I'm saying you try really hard. Oh. I stand by that.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean by that? Like, yeah, some people are inherently
they're just good,
golden and natural, and all of their everything that they do is genuinely to help another person feel better and to rise themselves up. Other people have to constantly think, this is what I want, this is my selfish impulse. Mm-hmm. Oh wait, no, that's not okay. I have to. And that's okay.
Yeah.
Like that's good. You've got the consciousness to try really hard.
Yes.
Doesn't mean that all of your intentions are good. Doesn't mean that they're not like got a selfish undercurrent, you know? Yeah. I see you. I feel like I've gotten so good at seeing people in that way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm like, it's like the sober lens, you know? It's like a reality lens.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I hear what you're saying, but I see what you're doing.
Yes.
Like, be careful out there, pals.
Yeah.
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 Anyway, speak to you next week. Bye.
Goodbye. Affected by anything said in this episode, please contact Lifeline at 13 11 14 or www.lifeline.org.au. Why Am I Like This is a Wiggly Good production produced by Caitlin Ellen Moore and hosted by Tash. The audio for this podcast was recorded and edited by Ryan Martin John. The Why Am I Like This jingle was created by Annie Siegman and Ryan Martin John. Why Am I Like This was recorded and produced on Kaurna lands, and we pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Thanks for listening.